This is Laura Cookins of the Vietnam Archive at Texas Tech University, continuing the oral history interview with Michelle Steiner. Today's date is the 19th of March, 2004. I, again, am in the Special Collections Building on the campus of Texas Tech in Lubbock, and Michelle is speaking to me by phone. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Laura.
Michelle, tell me a little bit about your transition from Korea to Fort Bragg in 1973.
Okay, when we left Korea, had we really finished?
Well, if there's more, go ahead and tell me whatever you recall. If there was something unsaid, go ahead and.
Okay, did I mention about bringing my wife and daughter over there?
No, they were still in the, I think, Washington, was it?
Yeah, in Alexandria,
yes,
Virginia.
Yes, mm-hmm, Washington area, yep. Go ahead, and how did you got them to come over? You were able to manage
it? Yeah, well, what happened was mm-hmm. is that Sharon is not a great money handler.
Okay.
And she ran into some very strong financial problems there
mm-hmm.
While we were separated. So we figured the best thing to do was to bring her and Sarah over to Korea. I could not get a command sponsorship, but I could bring her over at my own expense.
Okay.
And I got permission from the Army to do that, found a place to live, extended my tour there from an extra 6 months, so it would be a year and a half tour instead of a one-year tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the six-month point when they came over. So we stayed there for another year.
Now, were you living on the economy, as they say?
Yes, we were living on the economy.
Okay.
We found an apartment. There were a lot of, it was, I guess, there were a lot of embassy and consulate people from, not from the U.S., but from other countries like India.
Sure.
And, we had some Indian neighbors. That's why I remember India.
Mm-hmm.
Particular,
mm-hmm.
which was very nice to Sarah because she got to play with Korean children and Indian children and whatever other countries there were.
Sure.
Mostly, I won't say third world because I don't consider India a third world
mm-hmm.
nation,
mm-hmm.
but non-European, let's say.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Which would be pretty accurate, actually. And Sarah doesn't remember anything of it, except for some very isolated memories.
Because she was only, a year and a half or 2 years old?
It was a year and a half when we got there, 2.5 when we left.
Sure,
uh-huh. But one curious thing, we lived at the Mapo apartment. And whenever we went, went back to the apartments from the base, quite often we take a taxi rather than the military shuttle bus,
mm-hmm.
especially on weekends. And, we get in the taxi and I'd say Mapo Apart, which is Korean for Mapo Apartments. And after a while, Sarah started thinking that a taxi cab was a Mapo.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't think she ever extended that to cars in general.
Okay, just taxi.
Maybe, yeah. But anyway,
uh-huh.
It was a nice tour. It was a lot better living on the economy with, the family than living in the barracks.
Yeah.
For a Quonset hut.
Oh, I'm sure.
Especially in the winter. And, we would entertain friends there, my coworker and some other friends we made. They always... They did not object to coming to a home and having a home-cooked meal.
I bet. Now, were you quite popular socially because of having your own place? And
not really. We just had a small circle of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often it would be going out. One of my friends, who's still a distant friend now, he brought his wife over for a month when he took leave. Instead of taking leave and going back to visit, he brought her over.
Uh-huh.
And I forget if they stayed in a hotel or they managed to wind up house-sitting. I think they were staying in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
It because we never visited them anywhere, you know, in the house.
Right.
But, you know, we had a lot of time together. In those days, Sharon had had very bright red hair.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary, not my Mary, but Steve's wife,
mm-hmm.
is albino.
Okay.
And one evening we were out at a one of the Korean nightclubs.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary and Sharon went to the bathroom. And just about every woman in the nightclub got up and went to the bathroom and followed them.
They were a matter of some curiosity.
Yeah, because, you know, especially, you know, someone with white hair and the pale skin and the pink eyes.
Absolutely.
Someone else with flaming red hair.
Did Sharon cope well with being over in Korea?
Oh, yeah. She loved it there. She had always been very interested in Asian nation cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we would go with the family down into the marketplaces and places that GIs don't go to often, tourists may go to,
mm-hmm.
but that are very interesting. And when we were in Japan later, we did the same thing. But, no, she really enjoyed it. And for the only time in our lives, we had a maid.
Really?
Yeah, she came in, I think, 2 or 3 days a week and did dishes. And, you know, while she was not there, we tried to keep up with the dishes ourselves, of course.
Sure.
But, you know, if she'd come in on a Wednesday, you know, we'd know, don't bother doing the dishes from Tuesday because Miss Kim will do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and she vacuumed, well, not vacuumed, but she swept and dusted and all that, and did laundry and all that other stuff for us.
How did you come to have that arrangement? Was she someone who worked for other military personnel? Or?
Actually, I think our the rental agent of the apartment complex referred her to us, or
mm-hmm.
us to her.
And did you have a chance to speak with her much, Michelle?
To a degree.
Uh-huh.
Did
you find out anything about her and her life or her background?
Well, she was in her 20s, lived with her parents, and, you know, was saving up to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a language barrier. Even though I had gone to the language school, my Korean was better than her English, but my Korean wasn't all that great.
Right.
Because I didn't have a chance to use it on duty all that.
Sure, exactly. You had mentioned that before.
Yeah, because, you know, I was, you know, the object when I went there, I was supposed to work in a job where I would be using the language, but it turned out that just at about the time I got there, someone who we had detailed to the IG office was leaving, and one of our highest priorities was to replace him. And I was the newest person there, so I got it. I loved the work, though, as I said.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think we described that in the last session.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask on the language question, just to sort of double back to that for a moment.
Yeah.
Did Sharon pick up any Korean? Was she able to...
Not really.
Okay. Did she have any difficulty negotiating sort of daily things like going shopping and, you know, getting around the town and stuff? Did
no.
She? Okay. So English, she could get by pretty well even though she didn't have...
Her. Right. Because,
okay.
You know, her shopping was at the commissary.
Entirely?
Oh, 90% of the, you know...
Okay. Uh-huh.
Well, I think we bought all our food at the commissary.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And I remember one day we were in an outdoor market, and there was something she wanted to buy. I think it was an infant carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And she was negotiating with the woman who was running the stall.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they were writing numbers back and forth on a sheet of paper.
Okay.
Now, there are ways.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you recall about your time in Korea that you wanted to include that I haven't asked you about?
Not really. That was about it.
Okay. Now, you you said you had extended your tour by 6 months.
Yeah.
So you knew essentially when you would be being relocated.
Well, yes, because I would have not known anyway because it was a 13-month tour.
Okay. Did you know?
And we extended it 6 months to make it a 19-month tour.
When did you find out that what your next posting would be?
I guess it was about 2 months in advance.
Uh-huh. And
B3.
What did that turn out to be?
It turned out to be Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Okay. Was that to another MI group?
Right. It was to an MI company.
Okay.
That was in support of the 18th Airborne Corps.
Mm-hmm.
No, excuse me. We were not in support of 18th Airborne Corps. We were primarily in support of the non-tactical units at Fort Bragg.
Okay. Let me ask you, first of all, where did you and Sharon live in or around Fort Bragg?
We lived in on-post housing.
Okay.
That was our first experience with on-post housing.
Can you talk to me a little bit about that? What was it like?
Basically, it was a two-story townhouse.
Okay.
I had to go through an orientation on it.
Uh-huh.
And basically, it's like, you're expected to do all the chores that you would do if you owned your own home, like replacing washers and faucets, et cetera. Yeah, I was thinking, but, you know, I'm renting in effect. All this kind of stuff is normally what a landlord would do.
For sure.
But no, in the Army, you get to do it.
So you get cut both ways. You have no equity, and you have to...
Right. But I don't pay rent either.
Oh, okay. Well, there's that.
Well, my rent is what my quarters allowance would have been if I lived off coast.
I see. But that's for the accountants, really. You never saw any of that.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Oh, backing up a little,
on
our way home,
mm-hmm.
What we wound up doing was getting permission to fly commercially instead of on military aircraft or military charter.
Why was that?
I applied for it and arranged it.
Uh-huh.
So we flew to Seoul, Korea. I mean, from Seoul, Korea,
uh-huh.
to Tokyo, and we spent, I think, 4 days, 3 nights in Tokyo on leave,
uh-huh.
and then flew to New York.
And did you see your folks at that time?
Yeah, we uh-huh. flew back to see my folks.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Made time with my folks then.
And when you went down to Fort Bragg, let's see, Sarah was 2.5.
Right.
Was there any accommodation made for very young children like her in the way of giving parents a break or an educational program or anything like that?
You mean by the military?
Yeah.
No, she was really too young for that still.
Okay.
They did have a child care center on base,
uh-huh.
and when Sharon started taking some courses at the local community college, we put her into the child care center, and
mm-hmm.
which in a way was sort of like a preschool, but normally preschool starts at 4.
Sure. Yeah.
So it was mostly an activity center to keep a nursery, more or less.
Mm-hmm. And Sharon got a break. Now, what was she interested in studying?
She was a practical nurse, and she was trying to go for an RN.
Okay. And did they have courses that were going to be helpful to her in that?
Yes, they had an RN program.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, before she could even get into the RN program, she had to take some courses and subjects that she never took in high school that were prerequisites.
I see. So they had that available.
Well, you know, like chemistry.
Sure, exactly. What college was it? Do you remember the name?
It was a community college in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Okay.
I don't remember its name.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me a little bit about what your new job was.
Okay, this was basically, we were basically of a tactical nature in support of the of the units on Fort Bragg that were not part of 18th Airborne Corps. Of course, 18th Corps had its own MI unit,
mm-hmm.
and the 82nd Airborne Division had its own MI unit.
So,
I think the 82nd was there, but I know Corps Headquarters
sure.
was there.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, We were doing security inspections and surveys and stuff.
What kinds of units were on the fort that did not have these, that were not tactical units?
I can't remember its name, but it was a fairly large unit with a classified mission,
mm-hmm.
or a lot of classified documents in it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our work, and we didn't do that all often. Most of our work was sort of like make work, just like the Nike missile unit I was at Fort Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have, you know, it was, you know, everything was in a training state. Because we didn't get to do background investigations because the Intel Command field office there did them.
Mm-hmm.
But when units went out on the field, we'd go out and inspect them sometimes. There was a big field exercise for the National Guard down in Fort Stewart near Savannah, Georgia, that we sent security advisors down to.
Did you go on that?
I'm sorry?
Did you go on that, Michelle?
Were yes,
you...
I did.
Okay.
And basically, we wore armbands to indicate that we were not part of the unit, that we were in the evaluators.
Uh-huh.
But even though we wore those evaluator armbands, we were actually working as security advisors and not evaluators, which added some bit of unrealism to it because we were there but not there. As far as the opposing forces were concerned, because we wore the armbands, we were off limits to them,
mm-hmm.
as if we were evaluators. But we were working in the command headquarters for the units, providing advice and assistance. And if it had been a real war and we had been there, well, of course, there wouldn't have been evaluators either.
True.
But we were acting more as people attached to those units for function. So it was a very weird situation.
What was the rationale behind that, or was it just...
I don't know.
There may not have been any. I don't know.
Knowing the Army, there could very well have not been any.
Can you give an overall appraisal of how satisfied you were with this placement that you had at Fort Bragg?
It was one of the least enjoyable, lesser enjoyable assignments I had.
Okay. Were you taking any action to get yourself reassigned?
No, I didn't.
Okay. How did it come about that you moved on from there?
Well, I was there about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
And in one of Robert Heinlein's science fiction novels, talking about the government bureaucracy, he said there is a fairy godmother department, a little old lady wearing tennis shoes, white and with white hair, who works from 3 to 4 p.m. every Friday, will occasionally bestow upon someone a gift. Of course, this is entirely fictional, but I say I had been. The reason I brought that up,
uh-huh.
I was touched by the fairy godmother department.
Okay, that sounds right. And what was the result?
I was sent temporary duty for 6 months to Fort Huachuca for MOS cross-training, and then to the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, to study Japanese for a year.
Talk to me a little bit about the cross-training. What was the new area to be in?
The new area was Area Intelligence Specialist.
Okay. What does that mean?
But, well, basically it was human collection.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's all I can say about it.
All right. And you trained on that for the six-month TDY period?
Right.
Okay. Can you tell me anything about your family arrangements for moving to Arizona?
Basically, the Army would pay for transportation. The Army would pay for transportation to Monterey for my family,
mm-hmm.
because Fort Huachuca, even though 6 months, was TDY en route.
Oh, I see. Okay. Uh-huh.
So basically, once I got to Monterey, I could claim travel expenses, I think. I'm not sure, because I know we moved a lot of our furniture and stuff to Fort Huachuca, I think. It's very hazy.
That's okay.
It may have been we got a furnished apartment and had all our stuff in storage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was. Our stuff went into non-temporary or long-term storage because I was going to be on TDY.
Sure.
And basically, we drove back up to New York, spent some time there, and then drove out to Fort Huachuca, stopping en route at Fort Bliss, Texas for a few days because I wanted to show Sharon Fort Bliss in El Paso,
mm-hmm.
which because I really enjoyed my assignments at Fort Bliss. And I was hoping possibly to retire there.
Okay.
In the El Paso area, so I wanted her to see it.
Sure.
And I introduced her to some friends I still had in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to Fort Huachuca, got into a motel or guest quarters, rented an apartment, and basically stayed in the apartment for 6 months while I was in class.
Was she able to work during that time or continue to go to school?
No, she stayed home and mm-hmm. Took care of Sarah.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
We actually got to Fort Huachuca about a week early, mm-hmm. or maybe even 2 weeks early, before my class began, because when I left language school, I asked for 2 weeks' leave. Not language school. I'm getting that confused with something else.
Okay.
When we left Fort Bragg, I asked for 2 weeks' leave, and they gave me four. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to use up all that leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I left. So we got there 2 weeks early. And most of the time I was working in the orderly room of the student company where I'd be assigned. But they let me take a 3-day pass, and we drove up to Las Vegas. My folks were there on a gambling junket,
mm-hmm.
and Dad arranged with the people who ran the junket to put Sharon and me on the junket, which meant we got free room and food. And the guy did this as a favor to my dad,
mm-hmm.
and also waived for us a gambling requirement. Because normally if you go on a junket, you have to guarantee that you'll gamble at least $2,000.
Okay. And that was waived for you?
What?
That was waived for you?
That was waived for me.
Okay, uh-huh.
We were considered part of my dad's junket.
I see. Mm-hmm.
But we got our own room.
Sweet.
Yeah, so it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first time in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it got Sarah and Sharon to see my folks again.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out it was the last time that Sharon ever saw my mother. or that my mother had ever had seen Sharon, because before we could get to visit them again, she passed away.
She being your mom?
What?
She being your mother passed away?
Yes.
Okay.
While we were in Japan.
Okay.
But after that junket, you know, we were staying on, you know, Arizona or further west, and our folks were back in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So once the class started, you know, basically it was routine, you know, spend a lot of time, you know, all day in class, a lot of time in the classroom in the evening studying, because it was a classified class. We couldn't take our any couldn't do any work outside the classroom. And basically, that's how the 6 months went.
Okay.
The class started, I think, in like October. We had a two-week break for Christmas, and we drove out to the West Coast and went to Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
During that trip, I managed, or before that trip, I managed to contact an old high school buddy of mine who lived in San Bernardino and visited him. Actually, he wasn't a high school buddy. We had gone to different high schools, but we grew up in the same apartment house in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't seen him in over 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. No, no, excuse me. In about 15 years,
mm-hmm.
14, 15 years. You know, we saw each other in 60 or 61, just before I joined the Army, while he was home on leave from the Navy. And this was December of 73, so
wow.
12 years.
Wow. And was that a good kind of reunion? Was it a good reunion?
It was nice, mm-hmm. but we realized we really have nothing in common anymore.
Sure.
And we exchanged a few letters after that and then lost contact.
Okay.
Completely. I have absolutely no idea where he is or anything.
Now, your training materials were all classified, so that kind of stayed at home. Did you get to get out and around in Arizona at that time?
Uh-huh. We got up to Tucson quite often, almost every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Got up to Phoenix maybe once a month. Got into Mexico a few times. Agua Prieta and, I can't remember the name of the other city, and it's bigger than Agua Prieta. Down Highway 19 from coming down off of Highway 10. Oh, well,
that's
I just
okay.
don't remember.
That's okay.
Yeah.
was it clear to you while you were at Fort Huachuca that you would go from your cross-training period there to language training? Did you already know that?
Right, yeah. That was on my orders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was on my orders before I even left Fort Bragg.
Okay, so I gather, the spring of 1974, you then moved to Monterey?
Right.
Okay. Can you talk to me a little bit about the Defense Language Institute, the curriculum, and your instructors? Any idea, any memories of those things?
Uh-huh. We, basically, it was set up, the language school had been there for years and years and years.
Sure.
It was originally the Army Language School, and then when Defense Department integrated all the language schools and called it Defense Language Institute, it became Defense Language Institute West Coast Branch.
Mm-hmm.
And we had members of all services there. Basically, we had six classes a day running approximately 1 hour each. Three of them, then we broke for a two-hour lunch, and then three more hours. Every night, just like in the when I was studying Korean, we had to to memorize dialogues every night.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was about two hours a night of homework and memorization.
And you're studying Japanese, right?
Japanese.
Just want to clarify. Uh-huh. Were you studying an equal balance of of speech and writing and reading, or was it heavily one way or the other?
It was probably slightly balanced, tilted towards speech.
Okay. But you were also learning kanji and...
We were also learning kanji and hiragana and katakana.
Okay. And how did you do with the characters?
I did fairly well.
Okay. Uh-huh. Did you find it difficult, or did it kind of come to you?
It came to me easier than the Korean did, because a lot of the kanji and the Korean hanja, a lot were the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the studying overall was easier because I had the experience from studying Korean. So I had some of the Japanese, the language study habits ingrained already.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. When I graduated the Korean class with an 82%, I graduated the Japanese course with a 92%.
Wow. That's impressive.
We had one student in the Japanese class who I think had something like a 98%, one mm-hmm. of the Air Force guys in mm-hmm. our class.
Now, tell me a little bit about the other people in the class. Do you remember, aside from his having done very well on the finals, do you remember other people in the classes, and what backgrounds did they have?
Well, let's see. We had a Navy commander or lieutenant commander who was being assigned to the embassy as a military liaison. I know he was taken aside from some of our classes to be given individual instruction on some of the more diplomatic languages,
okay.
Forms of the language.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We had an Air Force lieutenant. We had an Air Force NCO. We had an Army private who was going into what was then the Army Security Agency for voice intercept radio stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We had an African-American Army E-7 who made E-8 while in class, and he was an interrogator. And because he made E-8, and the assignment he had been scheduled for was an E-7 slot, they canceled that assignment, and he wound up going to Fort Ord, just down the road from us, after graduation, become a first sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the Navy commander was talking about the stupidity of the Army, of wasting all this money for education, language education for the guy, and not having him use it. And we said, that's because he got promoted while in class. And they said, well, they should have known he was up for promotion. And yeah, but there's no guarantee he would be promoted.
Sure.
Anyway, it was a little inter-service rivalry.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah, but Monterey was a wonderful place. It's a place we would have loved to have been able to go to live, you know, retire upon retirement.
Mm-hmm.
It would be way too expensive for us.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed it. The class took some field trips to local Japanese restaurants and up to the Japan Cultural Center in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharon and I would, you know, we took trips driving down the coastal highway, went to Big Sur. We'd go up to San Francisco on our own occasionally, or the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Santa Cruz to the beach boardwalk. And we really enjoyed ourselves.
Now, the course lasted for a year, is that right?
Right. 47-week class time. Plus a 2-week break at Christmas, plus another 1-week break. They because of what it is, they wouldn't let you go more than 6 months without a break.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, because of the starting time in class, we managed to get a 1-week break in addition to the 2 weeks at Christmas.
So the course came to an end in April of 75?
Got there right at the beginning. It came to the end in April or early May of 75.
Okay.
Right.
I just want to step aside from the course of your career at this point to ask if you were paying any attention at all to events in Vietnam at this time. This is at the time of the fall of Saigon.
I was, yes.
Did you watch that on television, the fall of Saigon and the pictures from the helicopters at the roof of the embassy? And,
I sure did.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any particular feelings? Did it bring anything up for you? And what did you think about the conclusion of U.S. involvement in Vietnam in that manner?
I had very mixed feelings.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I was glad that it was over. I still felt and still feel resentment at the political apparatus in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
They were telling us fight a war, but tying at least one hand behind our back. Backtracking a little.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. When I was in Korea, I remember reading in the paper, probably the Stars and Stripes, although it may have been the International Herald Tribune,
mm-hmm.
that a small village in Vietnam called Mo Duc was overrun and by the Viet Cong army and was now under Viet Cong control. As if you remember, that small village of Mo Duc is where I spent my last 5 months in Vietnam.
Absolutely remember, and I wonder what went through your mind.
Basically, I was hoping that the Dai Uy, which is a Vietnamese captain, who was a village chief,
mm-hmm.
Was safe, and that all the other people I had worked with were safe.
Have you, Michelle, made any kinds of efforts over the years, not just recently, but over the years, to find any of the people that you served with and contact them and make sure, you know, find out what happened?
No, I never made any effort.
Okay.
However, I have occasionally bumped into some of them.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Not recently. Actually, the most recent was like about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But at the end of your career, you occasionally would see people from...
Okay, no, after I retired, I wound up living in Sierra Vista for a while outside Fort Huachuca.
Mm-hmm.
And I had written a letter to the editor for the local newspaper, and somebody else who had been retired living there, who had served with me in Vietnam, saw my name in the paper, looked it up in the phone book, and called and said, "Are you the one who served with me in Da Nang with the Phoenix program?" And you know, first he introduced himself, of course.
Sure.
I said yes, and so he came over and visited, and we chatted, and
uh-huh.
I never saw each other again.
Okay. It was interesting, though, I'm sure, to have
actually
someone...
Later on in my career, when I was at Fort Bragg, on one of our trips up to New York, I stopped at Fort Meade, where First Army headquarters there. But the inspector general there was Colonel Horton, who had been the inspector general in Korea. So I stopped and paid him a visit and asked him if he would write a letter of recommendation for my warrant officer application.
Mm-hmm.
He did. And there were a few other people who I had served with in Vietnam. Major Thompson, who I had managed to track down somehow, I forget. And I wrote him a letter asking for a letter of recommendation for my warrant officer application.
Mm-hmm.
I had actually applied for warrant officer twice. Once when I was in at Fort Bragg, and once when I was at DLI in the West Coast at Fort at the Presidio of Monterey.
Okay. And while you were at the Presidio, did it come through?
Well,
what happened with it?
I went through the board and everything.
Yeah.
But I had not heard anything by the time I had graduated the course.
Mm-hmm. And did it ever come through?
Yes.
Okay. When did it actually?
While I was in Japan.
Okay.
Back about a month after I got there.
Okay. But between the time that you were in Monterey and the time you went to Japan, did you have another short course in Arizona?
Yes, I went back to Fort Huachuca
uh-huh.
for the non-commissioned officer's advanced course.
Okay. And that lasted how long?
2 months.
Okay.
8 weeks.
And can you tell me about that? First of all, what were your classmates like in terms of their careers? Were they at the beginning of their careers or like you, mid-career? Or?
This was an advanced course for senior NCOs.
For senior NCOs, okay.
Yeah, so we were all E7s. I think there were a few E6s on the E7 list.
Okay.
Yeah, I got promoted to E7 while at Monterey by then.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. And
so I was a sergeant first class at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got there, I was a very junior sergeant first class. I was one of the junior people in the class, except for the few E6s on the E7 list, of course, were ranked lower than me.
Sure.
Bumped into a few people who I had either gone to school with years before or with whom I had been assigned somewhere along the line.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the content of the course? Can you tell me about the curriculum?
The curriculum was mostly leadership, traits of leadership, deeper overviews of the intelligence organization and structure.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of stuff.
Okay. And was it for you mostly review kind of things?
Most of it was review. Almost all of it was review.
Uh-huh. At what point did you get your orders for Japan? I mean, obviously you knew that's where you were going to go, but...
I got my orders for Japan while I was in Monterey.
Okay, uh-huh.
With temporary duty en route to Fort Huachuca.
Okay, I see. And what was the length of the posting to Japan when you were
first? This was a three-year tour.
Okay.
Overseas tours, in general, are... If it's a hardship tour, it's 1 month, one year to 13 months. If it's not a hardship tour, it's 3 years if you're married and have your dependents with you, or 2 years if you're single or if you're married and your dependents are not with you.
Okay.
One exception that I know of is in Germany, where it's 3 years regardless of marital or dependent status.
So I assume then from that the plan was that Sharon was going to go back with you to Japan this time.
Yes, she was. Yes.
Uh-huh.
She was command-sponsored and traveled with me, and the government paid her travel and my daughter's travel also.
Okay. And your daughter at this point is, what, turning five? Or?
Yes. We went there in June of 75, and she turned five in August.
Okay. And so she's ready to more or less start school.
Right.
What was the what schooling arrangements were? Well, first of all, where were you stationed?
We were stationed at Camp Zama.
Okay, which is where?
Which is a suburb of Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
It's located near the town of Sagamihara.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it was southwest of Tokyo,
okay.
If I remember correctly.
Tell me a little bit about the living arrangements that you had.
Okay, when we first got there, we were in a hotel-type arrangement, transient
mm-hmm.
family. Then while we were waiting for family quarters, they put us into temporary housing at an Army depot in the Tokyo area, where I had to take a bus to get to and from work, military bus, shuttle bus, until my car arrived.
So you shipped your car over?
Excuse me?
You shipped your car over?
Yes.
Okay.
And they had us scheduled to actually, I think we even actually got to look at quarters. Basically, they show you three sets of quarters and you choose which one you want. And I forget whether we got to actually look at them or not, but then my warrant officer appointment came through. And they had been there maybe a month.
Now, what difference did that make to you in terms of, for example, basic things like where you were going to live and all that?
Okay, well, that meant I'd be eligible for officers' quarters rather than enlisted quarters.
Right.
So then we got to look at quarters again, or for the first time, because I don't remember whether I did look at them before the appointment.
Sure.
Before we were notified of the appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And which meant that we got larger quarters, basically. And it was in a different section of the housing areas.
Now, were you quite pleased for that to finally come through?
Oh, yes.
Did you throw yourself a party or anything?
Uh-huh.
Good.
Invited people from my office. And
super. Now, what about Sarah? What arrangements were made for her?
She started kindergarten the next, you know, shortly after her birthday.
Okay, on the base?
On the base, yeah.
Okay. Tell
Department
me
of Defense has public school kindergarten through 12th grade at all overseas locations, not all installations. I know in some cases in Germany, the students are actually stay in dorms Monday through Friday and then go home on weekends because the nearest government school was so far from the base where their parents were living.
Now, as parents, were you able to be somewhat involved in schools, in the schools? Like, for example, did they have a parent-teacher association, that kind of thing?
I don't know if they had a parent-teachers association, but if they did, we didn't join it.
Okay.
But we did get involved, you know, conferences with her teacher. And
sure, And about how many children in her class?
I don't recall.
Okay.
I'd say maybe 12 to 20.
Were they getting any education about Japan as well as the regular kind of, you know,
letter? Oh, yes. They even took field trips.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know if they did in kindergarten.
Maybe in the next year or?
Yeah, but first and second grade, I know they did.
Where did they go? Do you remember any of those?
Oh, they went to Japanese restaurants. They went one time to a go-kart course. They went to museums. And I really don't remember any more details.
Okay. Now, did Sarah pick up any Japanese?
Not really.
Okay. So she spent most of her time, I'm assuming, on the base. And when she went off, it was either with the teachers on those trips or with you.
Right.
Okay. And what was Sharon doing?
For most of the time, Sharon was a stay-at-home mom. For part of the time we were there, she was working at the Stars and Stripes bookstore in at the Navy base that was a few miles away from where we were.
And what did she do there? Was she selling or
retail? Yeah, she was a clerk, cashier.
Was that? Did she enjoy that?
Yes, she did.
Okay. And and what about you, Michelle? What were you up to? What was the unit?
Before I got started, before I got my warrant officer, I was going to be working as a in the MOS I was trained for at Fort Huachuca.
Okay.
UMint.
Sure.
That's about all I can say about it.
Okay. Go ahead.
After I became warrant officer, the warrant officer position that they gave me was based on my old MOS, counterintelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't work in that office anymore. So, and as a matter of fact, I was excess to the allocation in the unit. Apparently, the people at DA thought I was assigned to the group headquarters in Hawaii for some reason.
So there was some confusion around
that? Because they reassigned me to the unit in Japan.
Okay.
Normally, when an enlisted person gets a direct commission or is appointed warrant officer, they are transferred out of the unit they're in. In this case, you know, they assigned me to that unit. It may be because they thought, I don't know, but it said I was being assigned from the 504th MI group to Detachment N, 504th MI group.
And
they may have done that as a fiction, knowing I was in Detachment N already,
mm-hmm.
but not more. But they had no place else in Japan to send me, and I'm sure they couldn't justify expending the funds to send me outside of Japan only a month after spent all the funds to send me to Japan.
Mm-hmm. And what information were you getting about all of this, or was it all kind of happening over your head in the personnel section?
Basically what happened was I walked into my office after lunch, and the office commander said, Steiner, I got some good news for you. And I said, what? And he said, yes. And I said, they want me to go and look at quarters. And he said, no. I said, my car has arrived. And he said, no. And I said, I paused, I said, my warrant came through? And he broke out into a big smile, stuck out his hand, and said, congratulations.
Well, what was? Do you remember his name, Michelle?
No, I don't.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then he, you have go to detachment headquarters. See the personnel officer. He has your orders. So I saw him, and then they told me I had to have a physical, like within 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. What happened, I found out, was my orders were actually sent to the group headquarters in Hawaii and then sent to the detachment. And normally it would have been like 2 or 3 week notice to have this physical completed. So our personnel people had to pull some strings with their contacts or call in some favors with their contacts at the Army hospital to get this physical rushed through before the deadline.
Sure.
Because it was a deadline by the date I had to be appointed.
Right, right.
So all of this had been done before I had even been told.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, just to clarify, am I right in understanding that the 504th MI Group headquarters was in Hawaii?
At the time, it was in Hawaii.
Okay. Where in Hawaii?
I'm not sure. I think it was at Fort Shafter.
Okay.
So I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, once all the sort of the paperwork snafu had been kind of clarified, your work involved what kinds of things?
I'm sorry?
Your work involved what kinds of things?
Before I made warrant or after I made warrant?
Afterwards.
Afterwards, I was in the detachment headquarters basically processing reports, intelligence reports that came through from our liaison section.
And can you tell me anything about the kinds of reports? Were these based on open literature or other sources?
From all sources.
Okay.
Mostly from human sources.
Okay. And can you tell me anything about what the general mission was? Were there Were there particular targets that you were keeping under watch? Or
a lot of the leftist dissident groups within Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And the rightist dissident groups also, for that matter.
Okay. Is there anything more you can tell me about that?
Not really.
Okay. You stayed there the required 3 years, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Did your work, now this is talking about your post-war and officer work, did it change substantially while you were there?
Not really.
Okay. And by processing reports, do you mean that you were contributing to them, or were you making sure distributions were correct, or...
Okay, I was reviewing them.
Uh-huh.
I was, in a number of cases, retyping them into more legible English.
Okay.
Because a lot of these came in Japlish.
Yes, okay.
If you pardon the expression.
Uh-huh.
And I was determining which of these was more than routine and needed special handling.
Okay.
Or needed to be brought to the attention of higher-ups. And
so you were kind of triaging.
In a way.
Okay.
Now, all these reports did get forwarded.
Mm-hmm.
But I would triage, to use a medical term, as far as, importance and which can be just sent up to higher headquarters without my superiors at our level needing to know about it.
Okay. How many people were in the office?
There were two of us.
Okay.
Myself and an NCO.
Okay. And was this work something that you enjoyed?
Not really.
Okay. And why was that?
Because it was paper pushing.
Instead of working with people?
Right.
Which was...
It was also very dry.
Uh-huh.
It involved... I didn't like trying to rewrite other people's works.
Mm-hmm. Were you using your Japanese language training?
No, because everything I got in was in English.
Did you use it at all?
Not on the job. If I hadn't made warrant officer and it stayed in the job that I mm-hmm. was assigned to when I first got there, I would have used it extensively.
Sure, okay. But because things sort of changed course,
right.
The actual work you were doing was, mm-hmm. was different, qualitatively different anyway.
Right.
Is there more that you can tell me about your time in Japan?
Things
that you did, for example, that you enjoyed?
Well, we went out and did a lot of sightseeing and tourism.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But all within a day's drive of where we lived. Because there was so much to see there.
Sure.
That, there are other things we would have loved to get down, to Kyoto and other places. But, there was so much we could do and see.
Very close.
Very close,
sure.
Where it didn't cost as much.
Mm-hmm.
Like getting to Kamakura was an hour's drive or an hour and a half train ride.
Mm-hmm.
Kamakura is one of the most beautiful and cultural centers of the country. At one point, it was the capital. So there are a lot of Buddhist and Shinto shrines and temples in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a wonderful beach. Sharon got involved with the Brownies when Sarah joined the Brownies, and Sharon wound up being a pack leader or troop leader or whatever they called them.
Uh-huh.
And she took her Brownie troop on a... on a field trip to Kamakura and asked me to come along with them as, to help keep the kids in line. And because of, I spoke Japanese better than she did, which mm-hmm. was, in her case, virtually non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
We took, they have a number of amusement parks, and we took Sarah to amusement parks. And my buddy Mike, the one who keeps popping up every so often
sure.
in my life,
mm-hmm.
he was working for the Red Cross at the time, and he was on an audit trip of Red Cross offices in the Far East. So he came, so we got to spend some time with him while he was auditing the Camp Zama office, and went to amusement park with him and Sarah and Sharon. And he had a few dinners at our house, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Michelle, did you ever observe any moments of tension, and I'm speaking now outside of your official work, between American service personnel or their families and Japanese?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
That's because I never really observed that much interaction between American service personnel and Japanese other than myself.
Sure. And nothing untoward ever happened with you or your family?
No, not at all.
Okay. Can you describe the general tenor of your interactions with Japanese, meaning you and your family?
It was all quite pleasant.
Okay.
You know, in most cases it was, interacting with storekeepers.
Sure, sure.
Occasionally we'd have conversations with people on the trains or subways, because they always like to practice their English.
Mm-hmm. Were they?
There was one case in particular. I was walking in downtown Tokyo, and I got lost, so I stopped a guy. I stopped, and I saw a man on the street and said, Sumimasenga, which means excuse me, please. And he said, sorry, no speak English. And I said to him in Japanese, but if you notice, I'm speaking Japanese, not English. And
that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I like that.
And he muttered something and then walked off. I guess he didn't want to talk to an American, even in Japanese.
Right. It wasn't the language that was critical, I guess, for him.
I guess.
I want to ask a bit of a more retrospective question, but again on this theme of the observation of tensions. Did you observe any racial tensions between, say, blacks and whites during the 70s in your career within the military? Were there ever times when African Americans and whites within the service didn't get along?
Just a little.
Mm-hmm.
While I was in Japan, I had the opportunity to give a talk on the Army Equal Opportunity Program.
Okay.
And I was talking about about things.
Uh-huh.
And our first sergeant, who was African American, said, are you talking about affirmative action? And I said, yes. And he was anti-affirmative action.
Did he let you know why?
Basically because he made it on his own without having to need affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
So he felt it was not necessary and that it was insulting to blacks.
Mm-hmm. How did you handle that?
I basically explained that I think his perception of affirmative action is incorrect,
mm-hmm.
and explained the official Army policy.
Which was, can you say?
Which was basically make sure everybody has equal opportunity.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I stuck basically to my lesson plan and gave the party line, so to speak.
And kept moving.
What?
And you just kept it moving.
Yes.
You kept the talk moving.
Now, a few moments after that, he stepped out of the classroom to have a cigarette.
Okay.
Word got back to me from some people who did not attend that session, but attended a different session, was that he stormed out in anger.
Mm-hmm.
Which I said, no, you can ask him. He stepped out to have a cigarette. He was not in anger at all.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he concurred with that when someone asked him about it.
Okay. And was this someone that you were seeing on a regular basis?
Again?
Was this man someone you saw on a regular basis?
Which man? The first sergeant?
Yes.
Well, he was the first sergeant of the unit, so everybody saw him daily.
Yeah, and was there was it fine between you and him?
Oh, yeah, we had no personal problems.
Sure, okay.
He realized I was, you know, teaching the official Army viewpoint.
Sure.
He could accept that.
Yeah.
It happens that I agreed with the official Army viewpoint.
Okay.
We've had some cases where people had to give classes like that where their personal opinions were different.
Uh-huh.
But they were professional about it and taught what they had to.
Sure. When did you get a notification about a new assignment?
I got that notification. I got notification a few months, maybe 4 or 5 months. And the notification said I was going to Fort Carson, Colorado.
Is that what actually happened?
No. About a month or two later, things came in saying I was going to Fort Hood, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And I called Branch and asked why, and he said, well, we have this new concept called SEWE, and Fort Hood is a test bed for, is a test installation for the SEWE, so that takes priority, so you're going to Fort Hood.
Now, this is SEWE?
C-E-W-I.
C? Okay, and what does that mean?
I don't remember.
What
was
the...
supposed to be, the concept was an integration of all intelligence disciplines. Whereas before, things were a lot more compartmented.
Okay.
We were trying to get a more integrated approach.
So at Fort Hood, there was a test project rolling this out to see whether...
Right. Basically, not so much a test project,
mm-hmm.
but a reorganization.
Okay.
Under the CWE concept.
Okay.
and I was going to be assigned to the 1st Cavalry Division, Emma. 1st Cavalry Division's Military Intelligence Detachment.
Okay. And is that actually what happened?
No.
Okay.
I wound up, in exchanging letters with my sponsor at that unit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got home on leave... Oh, by the way, backing up.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
When we were at... when we left... Fort Huachuca to go to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
We drove to Nebraska to visit visit Sharon's folks.
Sure.
And we spent some time with them, and then we actually drove to visit each of her brothers and sisters after leaving her folks' home, and spent a few days with each of her. Well, with two of her three brothers. The third one lived in the same town as her folks.
Mm-hmm.
And her other two brothers lived in different towns. And then we drove to visit her sister, who lived in yet another city,
mm-hmm.
all within Nebraska. And then we drove out to a Travis Air Force Base, you know, dropped the car off to be shipped, and then flew out to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
That and the Christmas trip when I was at DLI East Coast were the only two times we ever visited her folks.
Okay.
Her folks, you know, visited us a few times.
Uh-huh.
But that's the only time we visited her folks.
Okay.
But anyway, after leaving Japan, and again, we arranged for commercial flight instead of military flight, and we got on a short-bodied 747 and flew nonstop from Tokyo to JFK in New York City.
Wow.
14-hour flight.
In 1978?
78, right.
Wow, okay.
That was interesting.
Very much so.
Yeah, I think we got like 5 meals and 2 movies.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds kind of harrowing, but interesting nonetheless. Uh-huh. Now, you saw your folks after that and had some leave?
What?
You had a bit of leave at that time and saw your parents?
Right.
Okay.
Well, my father.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, of course. I'm sorry.
Yeah, my mother passed away while we were in
yes.
Japan.
Yes, I'm sorry. I had forgotten that.
Yeah, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, so, we stayed with my father, and I forget if he had remarried Anne already. No, he couldn't. No, he hadn't, but mm-hmm. they were living together.
Okay.
While I was there, I called my sponsor at the 1st Calf Division,
mm-hmm.
and he said, but we were told that your assignment was canceled. We're told you're not coming here. So I called my assignment manager at Branch at Military Personnel Center in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
or now Arlington, actually. And he said, no, you're still on orders for Fort Hood. Give me a moment and I'll find out what's going on. What happened was Fort Hood transferred me or changed my orders on post from that MI detachment to the 504th MI group, which was in support of 3 Corps headquarters. Which reminds me, the MI group when I was in Japan was not the 504th, it was the 500th.
Okay, 500.
And while I was there, they had moved the headquarters from Hawaii to Japan. So basically we wound up at the co-locating between Detachment N and the group headquarters all co-located together.
Okay, I see.
But that did not affect the job I had.
Right. But I'm glad you noted that the headquarters had moved
yeah.
to Japan. Okay. But you...
I had meant to mention it, but I had forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Now at Fort Hood, you were you think, with the 504th.
Right.
And in support of what units?
The third U.S. Army Corps headquarters.
Okay.
Fort Hood had one corps headquarters and one armored division, the second armored,
yes. Yes. Uh-huh.
and the first cavalry division.
Yes. And from that, anyone can glean that Fort Hood is huge.
Yes.
And tell me about your housing arrangements there.
Okay. Basically, we bought a house.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Cost us $33,000. It was about 1,200 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
It was built just after World War II. Just after the Korean War, I believe. Yeah,
sure.
Just after the Korean War.
Uh-huh.
The house was about 25 years old. The original purchasers had lived in it for 15 years, and we were the fifth owners.
Mm-hmm.
So after the first 15 years, it changed hands about every 2 years. Now, when I was at the 504th group, I was actually assigned initially to the counterintelligence platoon of Company B, Operational Security, of the 163rd MI Battalion, which was part of the 504th MI group.
Okay. And what was your work?
Our work was to support the non-divisional core units, including core headquarters, for counterintelligence and operational security.
Can you tell me what that actually means?
Basically, we did security inspections and evaluations of units, both in garrison and in the field.
Now, were there units posted in the field that you did actually go and visit?
Yes.
Okay. Where were they?
Out in the field in Fort Hood.
Okay.
As you said, Fort Hood is a very big place.
Yes. So, but not off the base. You weren't going off the base.
No, because they did all their maneuvers on base.
Okay. And no part of them was assigned overseas during the time you were there.
No, that's correct.
Okay. And you were there from 78 to until when?
Until 83.
Until retirement, basically?
Right.
Okay, 1983.
And there were a lot of reorganizations there.
Mm-hmm.
The 163rd was disbanded, and everything came under the 303rd MI Battalion. And those of us in counterintelligence there, well, most of us were reassigned to work out of the Corps G2 office for a while. And then there were some other reassignments, and I wound up working my last, I think, 2 years of those 5 years
mm-hmm.
in the S2 office at the 504th Group Headquarters.
Did your work change substantially with these many reorganizations?
Yes. Basically, what I was doing for my last 2 years, I was doing administration for security clearance paperwork. As requests came through from the battalion S2s, I reviewed the paperwork for accuracy,
mm-hmm.
completeness, and I also prepared the paperwork for people assigned to the group S2, to the group headquarters itself.
Okay. Were you enjoying this work? Was it more people-oriented?
It was more people-oriented, but it was still a lot of paperwork.
Sure.
But I was working with a great group of people in the office.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first time, working in that office was the first time it occurred to me that, yeah, I'm getting older.
Really?
Yeah.
How
we had a private assigned to us as a clerk. And I had enlisted in the Army before she was born.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of hit home?
That hit home.
Yeah.
I was in the Army before you were born.
Yes, that's true. You were. That's true.
Not you, I mean.
Oh,
but.
Well, it is actually true that you were in the Army before I was born. But you thought this of her.
Right.
And did it shake you at all, or did it make you want to plan for what was going to come next, or how did it
shake me a little and make me realize, hey, you're not as young as you used to be.
Sure. And what impact did that have on you? Did it spur you to be thinking about what you wanted to do after retirement?
Not really.
Okay.
It just
kind of shook you a little. And
it just not even shook me. It just awakened me.
Okay. Did it change anything for you?
No.
Okay. It was just one of those moments?
Just one of those moments.
Mm-hmm. And were you giving thought to what your life would look like after your retirement?
No.
No?
No. I'm the type of person who takes things as they come because I know things will always work out right.
Okay.
And because I believe that, they usually do.
Right. I think that's...
Somehow.
It's unclear which drives which, but in any event, it comes out well.
Yeah.
Is there more that you can tell me about the work that you did while you were at Fort Hood?
I could get down into minutia, but basically I cover the salient points.
Okay. Can you tell me about your retirement?
Well, basically, I had been at Fort Hood for, you know, going on 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
With very few exceptions, the only people, warrant officers at my unit, who left did so by retirement. There was one or two did get finally transferred out, but they had been there for like 6-7 years before they got transferred out. So when our branch managers came to visit us and fill us in on what's going on in the Army and everything, I asked him about what's the chances of getting transferred out of here. And he said, I'll look into it when I get back.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, basically, all I can do now is send you to an infantry division in Germany or to Korea, back to the old unit I had been in.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he knew I had been in that unit before, because that was when I was enlisted.
Sure.
And he said, but to do that, you'd have to request it. I said, can I get a company tour in Korea? And he says, well, all I can do is send you to the unit, and you'd have to negotiate with them about getting getting a company tour if they have any slots for it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that unless you're on orders for them. So after discussion with Sharon, we decided that I would put in for Korea if I could get the accompanied tour. We take it, and if I couldn't get the accompanied tour, I put in for retirement. So I submitted the paperwork volunteering to go to Korea, came down on levy for Korea, called the admin people in Korea, or called the people in Korea at the headquarters. I wanted to speak to the S3, the operations officer. Couldn't get a hold of him, so I wound up speaking to the battalion adjutant, who said, no, there's no way we can get you a command-sponsored assignment. So basically, I had 2 months from the date of my levy to put in for my retirement.
Wow.
And put in for the retirement would be I'd have to retire no later than 6 months, or the end of the month in which 6 months past the date of the levy came in.
Mm-hmm.
So I called branch manager and said, I decided I don't want to take the Korean assignment, so I'm putting in for retirement. And he said, yes, I can support that. Now, the only reason I was able to put in for retirement is because I had over 20-year service.
Sure, right.
Otherwise, I had no choice.
Yeah.
Of course, I still would have had the choice of not putting in the request in the first place. So I retired on May 31st, 1983. My first day on the retirement rolls was June 1st, which gave me a total of 22 years, 2 months, and 22 days active service, active duty. The only reason I remember that is because of all of those twos.
Right. Now, Michelle, was that a sad day in any way, the 31st of May?
No.
Were you anxious to get on with something new, or did you want a break, or how did you approach it?
Well, once we decided I was going to retire, I told Sharon, where do you want to live? And we made a list of every place that we would consider living. We then crossed off all those places that were too expensive to live in.
Sure.
All those places where we didn't like the climate, where it would be too cold. All those places where we didn't like the social climate, which left us a list of maybe about 4 or 5 cities.
Okay.
We verified to make sure there was a VA or military hospital at each of those places, because while we were at Fort Hood, Sharon got a job with the VA hospital in Temple, Texas, which was about 30 miles away. And she wanted to stay civil service, which meant basically VA or military.
Sure.
So she sent off requests to, we started by calling the hospitals in those 4 or 5 cities, because they all had, all 4 or 5 cities had either military or VA hospital, or both in one case. And 3 of those cities said they had openings for practical nurses. So she sent out her civil service job applications for in-service transfer, the 3 of them. One of them came back rejected because they had no openings, even though 3 weeks earlier they told us they did.
Sure.
One of them at Bliss Army, Bliss U.S. Bliss Army Hospital at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, came back saying, yes, we have an opening, we'll hire you.
Mm-hmm.
And the one from Beaumont General Hospital in El Paso, we never heard from. So we decided to move to Sierra Vista.
And is that, how close is that to the fort? Is it the city right next door?
Fort Huachuca is within city limits.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is it a safe guess that you've lived in Arizona more or less since then?
No, it's not a safe guess.
Okay. You moved somewhere else in the interim?
Right.
Okay.
We moved there.
Mm-hmm.
Bought a house there. We had some friends there. And one of them was a realtor.
Okay, sure.
But we bought a brand new house, had it built for us. We got there on the 1st of June, leaving Killeen on the 31st of May. Spent the night en route in El Paso, which was about the halfway point.
Mm-hmm.
Got there, or maybe a little even further. Got there in the afternoon. They had arranged a motel for us. It took 3.5 weeks before our house was ready for us to move in. Because they had started building it back in... hold on just a sec. No, back in about March or April, early April.
Mm-hmm.
And we got there. Sharon started working shortly after we got there.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking in for want ads in the paper, and found that they wanted somebody. Company needed course writers for Army correspondence courses in my field.
That was good.
Yeah, so I applied, and I found that I got interviewed, and I was one of the two people hired.
Okay, uh-huh. And how long did you do that, Michelle?
Let's see. I started that job in sometime in July, and in January the Army canceled the contract.
Oh.
And that was the only contract that this company had in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So I was out of that job. However, in November, 2 months earlier, I had started a part-time job selling computers at a new computer store that opened in Sierra Vista.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically selling gray market apples plus software for various computers. And in January, just about a week or two after I lost the other job, the store I was working for became an authorized Apple dealership.
And this is actually pretty early in the PC revolution, I mean the desktop.
This was 84.
Revolution. Yeah, that's still pretty early.
I had owned an Apple computer since October of 78.
But you would have been one of not too darn many. Is that
fair? That's true.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you're a dyed-in-the-wool Mac fan, I'm thinking.
Well, back then it was Apple II, but now I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Mac fan, yeah.
Michelle, ask you some general questions about your status as a veteran?
Yes.
Okay. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the Veterans Administration. And generally, do you feel that it's been properly resourced by the federal government?
No.
Okay. Why?
I had no contact with the VA other than being married to an employee.
Mm-hmm.
Until I moved out where I am now in July of 2001.
Okay.
For 12 years before here, after 6 years in Sierra Vista,
mm-hmm.
I was in Silicon Valley working in the computer industry,
okay.
mostly for Apple.
Uh-huh.
I had no health benefits through my employer.
Okay.
After moving out here, I had no health insurance, so I went to the VA.
Mm-hmm.
I went in, like, late July to get into the system. And I couldn't get my first intake appointment until November.
Now, this is just trying to get to see a physician in the first instance?
Right.
For a general physical or a...
Yeah, the first intake physical, first
uh-huh.
intake appointment.
And it was almost 6 months?
August, September, October, about 3.5 months.
Okay, I'm sorry, 3.5. That you had to wait just for that initial appointment.
Uh-huh. Right.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if they had the money, if the VA had the money to hire more caregivers,
yes,
mm-hmm. It wouldn't be that long of a wait.
Right. What kind of care? So you've been utilizing the system since late 2001?
Right.
And what's your appraisal of the care that you've received once you got in the door, as it were?
With some few exceptions, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
During that interim wait, I had a problem with my shoulder.
Okay.
So I went to the emergency room. And basically, the doctor there who I saw was very rude and I think incompetent. Basically, he had them take x-rays of my shoulder, said the x-rays don't show up anything, take this medication for... Take this prescription to the pharmacy, and if it doesn't clear up in 10 days, go see your primary care. And I try to tell him, I can't get to see my primary care until November because I'm not in the system yet.
Right.
He didn't want to hear it. Turns out, you know, I had had this problem already for 2 or 3 months. And it was a problem very similar to one I had had on my other shoulder a decade earlier, and that had required surgery to correct.
Uh-huh.
And I figured, you know, get to see early, maybe they can get to do something without the surgery.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Basically, it was, get out of here. Where's a pharmacy? Go ask out in the front desk. You know, I had to bite my tongue from saying, are you really a doctor or are you just a janitor pretending to be one?
Was that incident, did it sour you a bit, or did you think that was just him?
I thought
day?
It was just him.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So anyway, in November, I got to see my primary care person, who's a nurse practitioner. But I was said, they told me, if you're uncomfortable seeing a nurse practitioner, we can switch you to an MD.
Mm-hmm.
But after, you know, speaking with her for that one session, I had no problems with her.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Since she worked under the supervision of an MD, if something was beyond her scope, she had the resources.
Sure. Uh-huh.
So she got me an appointment with orthopedic surgery. Now, she referred me to them. The
yes.
only way I could get to them is through referral.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. The doctor there, he wanted to take a very conservative approach. So basically, he gave me a cortisone shot,
mm-hmm.
which didn't work.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Went back on my next scheduled appointment, saw a different doctor in the clinic, and he wanted to try physical therapy. Basically, what wound up happening is I had surgery on my shoulder. I had physical therapy that was working somewhat, and then had, but not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I wound up having surgery on my shoulder almost about a year after I first went to the ER on the first complaint. And by then, you know, the surgery was really required.
Okay. And so that's what ended up happening? You had to have the surgery?
Yeah.
Okay.
Other than that, I have had no problems and no complaints other than that one doctor and the fact that they didn't take a more aggressive approach to my shoulder initially.
Okay. But institutionally?
Institutionally, I have no problems with the VA medical system.
Do you see the broader VA now beyond the medical system? Do you see the broader VA as an advocate for you as a veteran, or a nemesis, or something in between?
Neither.
Or nothing?
Uh-huh. Nothing.
Okay, because you haven't had that much interaction with them?
Right.
And
my only other interaction with the VA ever was a home loan after I retired from the Army.
Oh, okay, right.
And basically, you know, it was everything went through the loan company, and they did what they needed with the VA.
Sure.
Who gave me the forms to fill out for the VA and all that.
And that went smoothly.
I'm sorry?
That went pretty smoothly.
Yeah, that went smoothly, no problem.
And do those benefits, that home loan option and the medical, and if you've accessed anything else, I don't know, but is that adequate to compensate you for the service that you gave to the country?
That plus my retirement pay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also with the VA, because of my service in Vietnam, I think I mentioned this, is that I have a 10% disability for diabetes.
And the assumption there is what, that the diabetes is related to?
The assumption is that the diabetes was caused by Agent Orange.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And by law, anybody who served in Vietnam has been exposed to Agent Orange, is presumed to have been exposed to Agent Orange.
And from your point of view, is that a good policy?
I think so.
Not just because, I mean, at this point you are deriving some benefit from it, but in general, do you feel that was a good decision?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Have you ever had any sort of negative response to you because you were a veteran? I mean, I'm sure that most people don't know, but, I mean, just walking down the street, but have you ever applied for a job or any experiences where your veteran status was a problem?
No.
Okay.
One interesting thing, one job I was accepted for.
Yes.
and this was for a major corporation.
Mm-hmm.
When I was, you know, after I was hired and I was at Human Resources filling out paperwork, she said, "Oh, good, you're a Vietnam-era veteran and you're over 40. That helps our EEO statistics."
Uh-huh. what do you think about veterans now of the Vietnam era having their own affirmative action classification? Is that a good thing? Or?
Considering how a lot of veterans were treated, yes, I think it is.
Okay. Why do you say that?
I don't
that?
Know if it's still necessary now, but, you know, during the Vietnam era and right afterwards, you know, there was a lot of prejudice against the Vietnam vets, and that EEO for us ameliorated that somewhat.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's fair?
I think it was fair then. I don't know if it's still necessary.
Okay. And I also want to ask you a general question again, this time about something that you alluded to earlier this afternoon when we were speaking about policymaking in Vietnam. Can you give your appraisal now of U.S. involvement in Southeast Asia, again, in general terms? Was it a good idea? If so, why? If not, why not?
Well, now I think now in retrospect, I think it was, we shouldn't have been there.
Why not? I mean, what makes you think that, Michelle?
Basically, because the situation in Vietnam was between two tyrannical governments.
Okay.
One that was in the Soviet sphere, and the other one wasn't. The only reason we were there, in my opinion, is because the other side, you know, we basically adopted anything that was anti-Soviet in those days.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason we were there, is because Ho Chi Minh and was in the Soviet sphere, or at least was a communist. So we weren't there to help fight, you know, for the Vietnamese people. We were there to fight against communism.
And is that, in your mind, insufficient to commit the kind of forces that the United States committed?
Yes, I agree. Yes, it was insufficient.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Michelle, is there anything additional that you'd like to add to this interview that perhaps I didn't ask you about, things that you may have thought of?
Oh, heck. Let's see. Not really. Nothing that comes to mind offhand.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for participating.
Okay.